Do you have what it takes to be a YouTuber, vlogger, or producer? Do you dream of having your own lifestyle or sports podcast? If you're like me, all these thoughts run through your head and then the excuses come. I don't know where to start. I don't have money to get this going. I don't have podcast equipment. Stop making excuses. Ohio Media School, the Be On Air Network, and the FCB Radio Network are helping you put an end to excuses. Ohio Media School and the Be On Air Network have been training people like you and me in broadcast media for over 30 years. They can show you the way to be your own boss and build your own brand by training you in just 8 short months. And they offer financial aid for those who qualify. Now, I know what you're thinking. I still don't have podcast equipment. Well, you can win an at-home podcast studio for free, courtesy of the FCB Radio Network. All you have to do is register now to win. Visit fcbradio.com/OMS contest. That's fcbradio.com/OMS contest. And sign up now for a chance to win. Call Ohio Media School now and schedule a tour and see what your future holds. 216-503-5900.
This is the FCB Radio Network, home of the best personalities and where real talk lives. Online at fcbradio.com. FCB.
Break faces when they drop jaw. Food chain says top dog. We don't listen to y'all, this the outlaws. We don't listen to y'all, this the outlaws. Make them scream out loud like a sound dog. Cause a ruckus in the crowd like a foul ball. Tune in if the charge for the outlaws. Tune in if the charge for the outlaws.
Welcome to the Outlaws. This is Darby O, the Kingpin Marl, alongside Robin O'Malley and Dante Bride. Don't forget to like us on Facebook at facebook.com/TheOutlawsRadio. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram at TheOutlawsRadio. We have a very special interview that we're going to get to in just a little bit. But first, Miss O'Malley, how are you?
I'm good, Darby. I mean, it's a sleepy Friday for me, but I'm good.
Sleepy Friday.
How are you doing?
So you chilling, huh?
Yeah, I'm just kicking back, you know.
All right, just relax. I know you sound kind of relaxed, but
yeah, I'm chilling. You know, I'm over here. Might be having me a little nice drink and whatnot.
Oh, okay. Little cocktail. Right. Little libations. Nothing wrong with that. Dante, how you doing, sir?
I'm pretty good. It's been a really good week. How are you, sir? I see your football team making some changes.
Don't start with me. This is an intro, so I'm not going to even engage in that because
I'm just a concerned
15
friend.
Minutes. Don't even. Yeah, what you need to be concerned about is that team that you root for. But anyway, we have a special interview, and we'll get to that right now. We have a very special guest on the show today. There is a documentary, I guess we could say a documentary or a video series or however we would phrase that, that's out now. And we're going to talk a little bit about what that is and what's in the series. She is the communications director at Capital Research Center. She's also the host of Marble Halls and Silver Screens. Sarah Elaine Lee, welcome. How are you, my love?
Hey, Darvio, I am very well, and I am so thrilled to be talking to you. I feel like we haven't talked in a long time, so thanks for having me on.
I know. It's just mainly been like texts. It hasn't been like like verbally in a long time. So I'm glad to hear your Southern voice.
That's what everyone says. I'm glad I could bring it to you.
So talk a little bit about this project.
Okay, so just to give you a little background, Capital Research Center is an investigative think tank here in Washington, D.C., where I live. And as you mentioned, I'm the communications director. And what we look at is the funding and sort of the connections between all of the sort of activism and the influencers that go on in our politics. And this is the stuff that doesn't get talked about a lot, right? You don't hear a lot about it, but it's actually the money behind the movements. So that's what we are dedicated to looking at. And it's on all sides. It doesn't play into one political side or the other. It's just how the money moves. So we've been looking at the Black Lives Matter movement in relation to Marxism for quite a while, because we study George Soros and some of the sort of the leftist foundations and things like that. And we have been looking at that movement because it is steeped in Marxism. I don't know that everybody knows that. I think it started to come out toward the end of 2020. And so we decided to sort of bring that to the fore by creating a video series. The idea is that we'll do 5 videos. The first one's been completed, where we're looking at the actual neighborhoods that were affected by not just the Black Lives Matter protests, but also the Antifa element that was there, and looking at how that affected the neighborhoods, the people that live there, what they got out of those movements, if anything, how they feel about it now, what they thought about it then. And so that's how we started this series.
Mm-hmm. And right now, the series is called BLM Aftermath, right? It's at BLMAftermath.com.
That's right.
So
that's right.
On this first edition or episode, however you want to phrase it, walk people through what they'll see.
So this first one, and I have to give all the credit and a major shout out to our videographer, Jeremy, of No Filters Media, because this was basically, we kind of gave him creative control and we were like, just go do it. And he did an excellent job. So he essentially went into the Minneapolis neighborhood where George Floyd was murdered, like right there on the street where the memorial to George Floyd is. And he talked to members of the community who were there during some of the protests. There is a pastor, Reverend McAfee. There's a woman who's a hairdresser who had worked all over that Minneapolis neighborhood doing hair. There's a community organizer who he was doing community organizing for years before the organizers showed up in these protests. And then there's a gentleman who was a business owner who had to shut his business down. So he's got these interviews with people that have deep ties to the community, who care about the community, who were there, who watched this all go down. And I think initially were maybe sympathetic to what was happening. And then they just watched it get completely out of control. And so they're talking about that. And they're talking about like, how the protesters, when they burned down the police station, for example, they were there trying to protect the cops from the protests, right? And they thought that the feds were coming, they never came. And then I think the other thing that's really important about the video is that they also talk about how much money the Black Lives Matter movement raised. And this is the, I wanna separate the sentiment Black Lives Matter, which is of course a good one and a true one, from the movement, which is funded by, you'll have to read the website where we link all of our work. It's funded by some really powerful left-leaning organizations. They talk about how there was a lot of money raised in the millions and their neighborhood has seen none of it. So it's a really interesting sort of look back at, I think, a movement that professed to care about the people that live in these neighborhoods and really didn't do much for them.
Yeah, I always find it very intriguing that with most American Marxists, it's Marxism for thee and capitalism for me.
Right. I think that's a really good way to put it. I think that's a really good, and it's very cynical, but it's very true.
Right. We're talking with Sarah Elaine Lee. She's the communications director at Capital Research Center, host of Marble Halls and Silver Screens, and one of the people involved in this video series, BLM Aftermath. Go to BLMAftermath.com if you want to check it out. Dante, I know you got a question. Go ahead, sir.
Okay, so Sarah, the Reverend in the video mentioned how one of the tactics of white supremacy would be to destroy the neighborhood from within and then reap the benefits of devalued property. Is that something that they're currently experiencing now in the aftermath? Is that something that'll be explored throughout the documentary?
Well, that's a really good question, because that came out in this first video. And I actually was surprised to hear him say that. And I believe him. I mean, I think that if that's what he's seeing in his neighborhood, there's no reason not to believe that that's true. So to answer the second part of your question, do we want to explore that further? Yeah. He's giving me the idea to go, maybe that's something we need to ask everybody in every city. If the property values are going up, if it's squeezing out Black owned businesses, if it's making people sell their homes, maybe their historic homes, their family homes, to get, you know, out of a neighborhood that's basically been trashed. And then you have other demographics come in and the prices go up and the Starbucks go on the corner, and you see what I mean? So he basically kind of planted that idea, and I think it's a good direction to go next. Yeah.
And to piggyback on that, I think in most what we would consider to be traditionally Black cities, you're seeing that all across the country in one aspect or another, whether it was directly in the aftermath of the riots and protests, or whether it was just a longer term game that was placed a long time ago, where you have now people of, and they all tend to kind of be the same political persuasion. We're talking specifically about woke white people. Mm-hmm. And it seems like in a lot of cities, you're having this same problem where African-Americans have been the backbone of some of these neighborhoods. And they've been the only thing holding the neighborhoods up as the world has completely collapsed around them. And then all of a sudden, here comes the woke white folks. And now, you know, Grandma Jones can't afford to live in her neighborhood anymore because her property taxes are too high.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's, you know, gentrification. And while there's some parts, I think, of neighborhoods flipping demographically, aren't a bad thing. I mean, you know, diversity is a good thing. So people figuring out how to live together. I come from Atlanta. So my high school, for example, was 51% Black. And I loved that was my experience growing up, because it's a richer experience, right? You get a better life because you see more. So I don't have a huge problem with, you know, diversity in neighborhoods. But when it's what the Reverend was talking about, where they've created chaos, and then people who otherwise wouldn't want to leave or give up their businesses are basically forced to, and it flips the whole neighborhood, that's different than everybody kind of coming together, living together, figuring out how to live together. You know what I mean?
Well, because part of the issue too is normally when it's orchestrated and top down, it's not a natural thing. It's not a natural come together, live together. You know what I mean? So when you put the whole thing in context, where you're talking about Black neighborhoods that have been artificially depressed when it comes to, of course, like redlining and stuff like that. And then you have the aspect of people being able to take advantage of that. Mm-hmm. And the issue that ends up happening, because of course this is part and parcel of the theory and beliefs of wokeism, they never approach most people who are disciples of wokeism. They never approach the situation with the aspect of putting more wealth, of creating and generating more wealth in Black hands so that Grandma Jones can afford to stay in her neighborhood. So it's not the new people, the new development that's the problem. It's all of the crap, the political crap that they come with it, where they push all of these different issues that don't help the people in those neighborhoods and eventually ends up forcing those people out.
Yeah, you know, that's a really good point. And I think that's right. You mentioned just sort of the philosophy of like the chaos, right? They sow chaos. And that's an excellent point, because with chaos, there is nothing grows. Nothing gets better. Like you said, there's no capital invested. It's just a toppling of the existing structure. And no matter what, no matter where, that generally isn't a good way to start something new.
Right. Well, and I'll give you an example. Here in Cleveland a few years ago, there was a push to raise the minimum wage to $15 an hour. The problem with the way that they were doing it is it only would have been a $15 an hour minimum wage in the city of Cleveland. not statewide, not countywide, not so anybody with half a logical working functioning brain understands what's going to happen. If you're going to jack up the minimum wage in an urban city, but not do it everywhere else, those businesses are just going to leave and move across the border to the suburbs, and you end up attracting more poverty.
Mm-hmm. You depress the inner city. Yeah.
Yep. Absolutely. Absolutely. And of course, as you know, because I know you've done the research, the same people who funded that were the ones behind issue 24, which is something we've talked about on this show.
Yeah. And issue 24, I just was looking up that it's actually been passed, right?
It passed, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, that in Cleveland, maybe Cleveland's a city we might want to consider for our project because, you know, the police reform movement basically is tied pretty closely to some of the stuff that we're exploring. And I think it's really important for people to understand that defunding the police, that idea, that precedes any racist cop situation in the United States. It actually goes way on back into, you know, the beginnings of Marxism. I'm not trying to get too sociopolitical here, but that's the truth. And so it's playing out now under the banner of a group that's saying we're doing this because we care about the African-American community. But this is an old idea, and it's really just about toppling communities to gain power. That's what it is. So I hate that it passed in Cleveland. But I think if Cleveland wants to right the ship, it can.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just unfortunate because, you know, there's going to be some more lives lost before that ship gets righted. Right. Mm-hmm. So more with Sarah Lee when we come back here on The Outlaws.
Do you have what it takes to be a YouTuber, vlogger, or producer? Do you dream of having your own lifestyle or sports podcast? If you're like me, all these thoughts run through your head and then the excuses come. I don't know where to start. I don't have money to get this going. I don't have podcast equipment. Stop making excuses. Ohio Media School, the Be On Air Network, and the FCB Radio Network are helping you put an end to excuses. Ohio Media School and the Be On Air Network have been training people like you and me in broadcast media for over 30 years. They can show you the way to be your own boss and build your own brand by training you in just 8 short months. And they offer financial aid for those who qualify. Now, I know what you're thinking. I still don't have podcast equipment. Well, you can win an at-home podcast studio for free, courtesy of the FCB Radio Network. All you have to do is register now to win. Visit fcbradio.com/OMS contest. That's fcbradio.com/OMS contest. And sign up now for a chance to win. Call Ohio Media School now and schedule a tour and see what your future holds. 216-503-5900.
Real talk, real conversations. We got the heat.
Give me the real.
Hell yeah.
This is the Outlaws Radio Show.
Welcome back to the Outlaws, and now to the conclusion of our interview with Sarah Elaine Lee. We're talking with Sarah Elaine Lee, the Communications Director at Capital Research Center, host of the podcast Marble Halls and Silver Screens. Make sure that you subscribe to that. And a part of this project, BLM Aftermath. And speaking of defund the police, Dante, go right in. Unmute yourself.
Oh, I'm sorry. So Minneapolis was a target of an abolish the police bill that was looked to be explored in the documentary. Can you talk a little bit about that? Because the people who were being interviewed for the doc, as seemingly a lot of Black people are against that, right? We want police to be held accountable, but not defunded or abolished because we know what that means for our neighborhood. So can you talk a little bit about the response to the abolish the police movement in the wake of the George Floyd incident?
Yeah, sure. So I want to first just talk about Atlanta. Again, it's a place I know. So I just want to say this. When you talk about the police relationship to the Black community in a place like Atlanta, the demographic makeup of the police division department in Atlanta is like 85% Black. So the relationship is very close. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. There's a lot of African-American police officers in a place like Atlanta. And I suspect, I don't know the numbers for a place like Minneapolis, but I suspect that's actually, you know, there are probably a lot of African-American police officers in Minneapolis as well. So we're talking about jobs too, not just sort of, you know, police reform, which I think there's room for police reform without question, but we're talking about people losing their jobs or not being able to do their jobs because they're having to answer to, instead of a public safety director, you know, a community panel, right? But in Minneapolis, to answer your question, they had what was called question two, where it basically would have replaced the police department. That would, and like they were talking about like approaching policing from a like a comprehensive public health like approach, okay? Which, what does that even mean, right? It's not about safety, it's about comprehensive public health. I would assume they mean things like, you know, they were trying to say, oh, well, we should just call counselors or, you know, mental health professionals when something bad happens, which is, you know, I don't know how that helps if somebody's house has been broken into. Okay.
You're nice. I'll say it. That's stupid.
Yeah, it's not that, it's not very smart. So Minneapolis rejected question two. And I'm not surprised, especially after watching that video that we made, because yeah, the people in that video, and let me just say this, I don't know their politics. I don't care to know their politics. That's not what this is about. I want to know what the people that live there are experiencing. And they're basically hands down, like, this sucks. Like we have to have, we've been, our neighborhood's been decimated. So I'm not surprised at all that Minneapolis, that the people that live there are like, we want our police.
Mm-hmm. And let me ask you, cause you just kind of made me think about something here. Is there anything, and maybe not for you, cause you grew up in Atlanta and, you know, you have more of a diverse background. And I know that by knowing you and knowing your musical choices that are on your playlist. But was there anything that you learned about our community that you didn't know before during the course of this project?
You know what? That's an interesting question. It reaffirmed some things that I suspected, but maybe didn't know. And what I mean by that is, you know, I think there's this mythology because we have turned in our culture, we have basically turned race into a sort of dividing line between all of us, right? Like, and it's a bummer because differences exist and they're great and they should be celebrated, not like, you know, hashed out and turned into ways that we can hate, right? I mean, that's just, to me, that's not how I want to live. So I guess what if, I think the woman, the hairdresser in the video was really compelling to me because what she did was she affirmed for me that the African-American community, particularly in Minneapolis, because that's where she is, she was like, I got a loan. I actually got a loan and I was going to start a business. And I don't want to do that now because things have fallen apart. And what that tells me is something I already knew, which is, you know, people, the human desire to own something, better yourself, have something of your own, build something, that cuts across every single, you know, neighborhood, every single life. Most people want to do that. And I get so frustrated that, you know, we try to find the ways that we're different when the things that kind of unite us all are those things. And she really reaffirmed that for me when she was like, you know, I want to be an entrepreneur. I was making steps to do that. And I love my neighborhood. And now I can't do that here. Uh-huh. So yeah, I liked that. I was like, that's a very human response. And, that's what I think people need to get right with, that we're not talking about races. We're not talking about classes here. We're not talking about, you know, cultures are different and that's great. And we can celebrate those things, but this human need to like live and thrive. That's what we should be talking about.
Right. And I'll try to try to make this question brief, because the answer could be really, really long. But I really want to stress this point, because I want people to understand this. One of the things that kind of piqued my interest about your project is, again, using, you know, telling real stories. You weren't trying to proselytize to anybody. It wasn't putting a political message, imposing a political message on someone. It was just telling the true story about what happened in those in that community through the lens of the people who lived through it. And as you know, and people who listen to the show probably know, but the folks who know me personally know that there are a few things that I despise more than people manipulating Black trauma. Mm-hmm. Right. I think it's abusive. Like, I think it's emotionally and mentally abusive. And you have some of these links and stuff on the website, because what we're having a conversation about race in this context. But a lot of the stuff that some of these folks are pushing is really just cultural Marxism under another name, right?
Absolutely.
So break that down for people, because we hear Marxism, Marxism, Marxism is thrown around so much as a buzzword. And sometimes people who aren't, you know, studying socio-political structures, you know, they don't understand that, or it goes over their head. So break down the connection between what appears to be a movement on race when it's actually other things involved.
So I'll do the best I can. We have a lot of.
I know that's a loaded question.
Yeah, it is. And the only reason it's loaded is that we've done so much work on it. So it there's just a lot to talk about. But I will try to be brief and as clear as I can be. So Marxism, you know, would like to destroy the established way of the way things are done, and build something new toward its own theoretical utopia. And the original sort of founders of the movement for Black Lives, it was Opal Tometi, Alicia Garza, and Patrice Cullors, who we all know who Patrice Cullors is now. She's the lady who quit once everybody found out she bought another house in, you know, LA, and she's really, really rich, and she's like, I'm out, right? They started the movement following the death of Trayvon Martin at the hands of George Zimmerman. But if you look at their history, they were all Marxists. They studied Marxism. They were avowed Marxists. They've admitted that they were. And Marxism itself is a philosophy that is absolutely counter to what we like to do here with the free market and capitalism. You work for the state. You are a ward of the state, basically. Everything, we see it in China. Your whole life is from cradle to grave, you're trying to just make the state big and powerful. You don't have your own agency, to use a word that they like to use. You don't have your own ability to make decisions about what you want to do with your life. You can't take your loan and start your hair salon, like the lady said. So these are very old ideas, late 1800s. And what communists tend to like to do, and again, this is, you know, if you study up on this, you'll see this, they really like propaganda. They love it. They're very, very good at it. They're probably the best that history has ever seen. So using the statement Black Lives Matter, is a form of propaganda. They took a true statement, one that hits at the heart of people, one that everyone agrees is true, and said, we're going to make this our mantra, and we're going to, you know, change things for you. But they don't do that. It's propaganda. It's just empowering, quote, the state. In this case, it's the state is the leaders of the Black Lives Matter movement who made killer bank off of all of this. And if you listen to the people in the Minneapolis video, I think the one guy spells out N-O-T-H-I-N-G, nothing. The community saw nothing. Mm-hmm. So cultural Marxism is Marxism through you know, socio sort of issues, right? Like we're seeing with Black Lives Matter, the movement. And it's not, I'm going to take my work hat off and put my Sarah hat on. I'm not a fan, even academically, of Marxism. I think it's a terrible philosophy. That's me speaking for myself. I think I can speak for my organization and say the same thing, but I don't want to do that. That's just me personally. So,
well, I mean, and the thing about it, like, as I'm listening to your eloquent explanation, you know, it's all to the service of the state. Well, mm-hmm. Who has been harmed more historically
by the state
than Black people?
That's exactly right. And that's a really good point. And so that's what we were just talking about, like the manipulation of Black trauma. That's what that is.
Yeah.
And it's really gross. I mean, it sort of makes you sick to your stomach, you know?
Yeah, because for me, you can't tell me you love me if you're willing to use my trauma to get your desired outcome out of it.
And yeah, and you get nothing out of it, by the way.
Exactly.
You get nothing but a torn down neighborhood and jacked up rents, and you can't use your loan to start anything. That's what you get.
Right. Exactly. So it your condition becomes worse and worse while someone else gets rich and has, you know, 14 houses as a result.
Yeah. And, you know, more power to Patrice Cullors. She's a capitalist.
Yeah. She's a capitalist for herself. But she's a Marxist for everybody else.
That's right. I mean, that's how she made her bank. Okay, fine. I mean, I say more power to her. I don't admire it. I'm just saying that's what she is. She's a capitalist, but she'll call herself a Marxist. You know,
right.
That's her career. But yeah. I do want to say one more thing. The Reverend in the video where he talks about white supremacy, I thought that was really, really, really compelling, because I think he's absolutely exactly right. Yeah.
Yeah, he's absolutely right. And real quick, for people who haven't seen it, summarize what he was saying about white supremacy.
He basically said that, you know, what you're seeing with what Black Lives Matter did to their community, and we're going to find it in other communities as well. So there's a bunch of white, it's funded by white people. The movement itself was funded by white people. And so to him, it's the worst case of white supremacy he's ever seen, because it is completely torn the neighborhood down, and now nobody can afford to work or live. And white people are now coming in and that can afford it and snatching up their homes. And he said that basically they define your reality and then they make you live under it.
Yeah. Can't argue with that. Mm-hmm. What's next? Can you give us a little teaser about what's next with the series? Have you all done the next episode yet already?
We have not. We are identifying the cities. I'm leaning, of course, toward Atlanta. We had some things go on down in Atlanta. You know, there was a Wendy's that burned down, and they were trying to kind of defund the police movement down there as well. And then a young child died, and they switched real fast midstream. The city was like, whoa. And so that might be interesting to explore. Cause I mean, once a kid dies, I think everybody goes, wait a minute, things are way out of hand. Right. I wouldn't mind looking at Cleveland, because Cleveland has an interesting history with Marxism. It does. And so Cleveland might be interesting. Definitely Washington, DC, cause I'm here. Maybe Kenosha, Wisconsin, because of the kid that is on trial right now, possibly Austin, Texas. So we're kind of identifying cities that we might want to look at.
All right. Let everybody know one more time how to watch the episode out right now and get more information about the stuff you're talking about.
All right, cool. You can go to blmaftermath.com. That's our little microsite we built that has all of our scholarly work on this issue. And it's pretty, pretty dense. So, you know, bring your reading glasses. And the video lives there, and we'll be putting the other videos up as we get them up. And then if you just want to look at our other work, it's capitalresearchcenter.org. And you can always go and look at the other things we do there.
And I can't let you go without plugging the podcast.
Oh, yeah. Marble Halls and Silver Screens with Sarah Lee. It is my absolute joy. It's where I vent. I talk about politics and movies, and Darby is my producer, and I love doing it, and I love working with him, and go see me there too.
All right. And let them know how to follow you, social media.
Oh, yeah. I'm at Sarah Lola on Twitter, S-A-R-A-I-L-O-L-A. And I, you know, I just, Twitter again is just like for fun. So if you want to just engage on Twitter and say, hey, I would love that.
Thank you so much for coming on the show, spending some time with us, talking about an important issue. Really appreciate it.
Yeah. Thanks, Darvio. We'll talk soon. I appreciate you having me on.
Absolutely. Stay tuned. We'll be back with more of the Outlaws after this.
Do you have what it takes to be a YouTuber, vlogger, or producer? Do you dream of having your own lifestyle or sports podcast? If you're like me, all these thoughts run through your head and then the excuses come. I don't know where to start. I don't have money to get this going. I don't have podcast equipment. Stop making excuses. Ohio Media School, the Be On Air Network, and the FCB Radio Network are helping you put an end to excuses. Ohio Media School and the Be On Air Network have been training people like you and me in broadcast media for over 30 years. They can show you the way to be your own boss and build your own brand by training you in just 8 short months. And they offer financial aid for those who qualify. Now, I know what you're thinking. I still don't have podcast equipment. Well, you can win an at-home podcast studio for free, courtesy of the FCB Radio Network. All you have to do is register now to win. Visit fcbradio.com/OMS contest. That's fcbradio.com/OMS contest. And sign up now for a chance to win. Call Ohio Media School now and schedule a tour and see what your future holds. 216-503-5900.
This is the Outlaws Radio Show.
Welcome back. Welcome back. You're listening to the Outlaws. And now is the time of the show that we like to call Tea Time with Ro.
Turn it up. It don't see no competition. The latest celebrity news and gossip. So you better ask permission. It's Tea Time with Ro on the Outlaws Radio Show. If you wanna roll
with me. Okay, y'all. So today on Tea Time, you know, I just seen a few days ago that Kobe Bryant, you know, I do know that he's not here. Obviously, he's not here with us no more. But he did make a very smart decision while he was still around. Kobe Bryant left behind a legacy as an amazing basketball player, a loving father and a devoted husband, and a very good businessman. And it looks like his early investments in his life are paying off in a big way for his family. So Kobe's family will be receiving more than $400 million after Coca-Cola announced on Monday it has acquired Body Armor in $5.6 billion. And Kobe's Body Armor was the third largest shareholder after he invested $6 million in the company in 2013. That was just 2 years after it was founded. So his family is definitely set. And, you know, I would say with this decision that he made in his life, and this can be a learning experience for all of us, you know, make sure that you invest in the right thing in your life, because it can pay off in the long run, not only for you, but when you're not around, it could pay off for your loved ones if you're no longer around. But yeah, I think that's sure. That's pretty dope.
For sure. For sure. Dante, your thoughts on that?
Yeah. Props to Kobe for, you know, continuing to be a provider even in death, right? Like that's a big thing, right? And, his, you know, like we talked off air, his family was already going to be set. But I like the example that this brings up that Robin is using, right? Like you want to, you know, because you can make this, you can bring this down to our level, right? Like you, the Bible says a wise man leaves an inheritance for his children's children, right? So it's just all around a smart thing to do, right? We don't estate plan enough, especially in our community going, you know, forward. Instead of leaving, you know, your family bills and stuff like that, you could, you know, leave them wealth. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And Dante, how much do you know? Because I don't remember off the top, but over the life of Kobe's NBA career, what did he hit?
Oh, Kobe signed a couple big deals. If I had to just guess, and I don't know this off the, if I just had to guess off the top of my head, I know he signed, he would have signed a rookie max coming off his rookie deal. He would have signed another one in like, probably like 03, 04. And then he would have re-upped again a couple times after that. And then he got the sweethearts deal, which everybody was kind of upset about at the end of his career when he probably didn't deserve it, but he still did deserve it. It was like a thank you before he retired. Yeah. That kind of made some noise. So if I just had to guess, man, I would say Kobe probably made, just from basketball, I would say Kobe probably made maybe like $300 million over his 20-year career.
So you're talking that, and then, and of course, you know, most of that, well, not, I'm not gonna say most of it, but a lot of it's probably gone because you got taxes and you got bills and you got houses and cars and stuff. But they weren't broke when he passed.
No,
right.
And then he's got the endorsement. I mean, he was Nike athlete forever, you know. Mm-hmm. As Robin mentioned, the body armor, which that was there. Right. Kobe had wrote a couple books, you know, made the movie, won an Academy Award. Like they were never gonna be hurt.
Right. But to have something like this, it's like the Bible said, like his kids
right
are gonna be straight, you know. So that's very, very smart move. Robin, if you had to, if you had a blank check to be able to invest in whatever, what would you invest in?
Oh, you know, that's a very tough decision. You know, I really don't know exactly what I would invest in. I would say something. See, I'm the type of person that I'm always thinking about like homeless shelters and stuff, but I really don't know as far as a bigger investment. I really don't know off the top of my head. And that's something that I really do need to think about, you know, now that I'm actually speaking on this topic.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Everybody else, everybody should. Dante, what would you invest in?
Cryptocurrency.
Smart.
Crypto. Yeah. Bitcoin and Ethereum, to be exact. Yeah.
And see, for me, I would do that too. I just don't understand it.
I've always wanted to, you know, understand it and learn it, but you know, it's like, it's definitely something you really gotta take some time to
because you lose your ass if you don't know what you're doing. So you pretty familiar with it, Dante?
Yeah. I love my favorite coin. It's flawed, but my favorite coin is Ethereum. It's not as expensive as Bitcoin. Bitcoin probably has the best fundamentals. It's going to be a monster. It is a monster now. It will continue to be a monster. But my favorite coin is Ethereum going forward. And we could probably talk off air about that too. And I can explain to the best of my knowledge what it is. But because I've, you know, been involved now for, I would say, about a year, year and a half now. So, okay. But yeah, Ethereum is to me, it's my favorite coin, even though it does have its flaws.
All right. So we're going to have to pick Dante's brain. That's what you're saying.
So I was about to say crypto tips from Dante Bryan. speaking of Dante Bryan, stay tuned. We have, I just blanked out on the name of the damn segment.
Dante's Hot Takes.
Dante's Hot Takes coming up next here on Outlaws.
Yo, what's up? Bring the noise right here. Chuck D, Public Enemy number one. You are tuned in to Outlaws Radio Show.
Yeah, this is Chris Gotti, and you're listening to the number one radio show, The Outlaws. You heard me? Adventure Music supports Chris Gotti. Go check him out.
What's up, y'all? It's your girl, comedian actress Coco Brown, and you're listening to The Outlaws Radio Show.
Yo, what's good? It's your boy SNMJT, and I'm with Outlaws.
Do you have what it takes to be a YouTuber, vlogger, or producer? Do you dream of having your own lifestyle or sports podcast? If you're like me, all these thoughts run through your head and then the excuses come. I don't know where to start. I don't have money to get this going. I don't have podcast equipment. Stop making excuses. Ohio Media School, the Be On Air Network, and the FCB Radio Network are helping you put an end to excuses. Ohio Media School and the Be On Air Network have been training people like you and me in broadcast media for over 30 years. years. They can show you the way to be your own boss and build your own brand by training you in just 8 short months. And they offer financial aid for those who qualify. Now, I know what you're thinking. I still don't have podcast equipment. Well, you can win an at-home podcast studio for free, courtesy of the FCB Radio Network. All you have to do is register now to win. Visit fcbradio.com/OMS contest. That's fcbradio.com/OMS contest. And sign up now for a chance to win. Call Ohio Media School now and schedule a tour and see what your future holds. 216-503-5900.
Welcome back.
You're listening to The Outlaws. Make sure that you subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio, wherever you get your podcasts. And if you listen to this show on Apple, please make sure you leave us a 5-star review. And the comment is very important for the algorithm. And for those of you who have already done so, thank you all so very much. And before we leave you today, it's time for Dante's Hot Take.
Telling the truth, whether you like it or not. It's Dante's Hot Takes on the Outlaws Radio Show.
Okay, so I'm a little upset and uncomfortable here with this recent development in this Ashley Biden diary story. So just to catch everybody up, let's rewind the clocks back to last October when then presidential candidate Joe Biden was running for office. There had been a development where his daughter, Ashley Biden, his youngest child, her diary was allegedly stolen. Now, this was allegedly the diary that she kept while she was in recovery. I guess she had some drug issues and some other issues, too, that she was working through. And she was in recovery, kept a diary, and it was stolen. Some alleged details from that diary that have not been authenticated but are very dark about her and her father taking showers together, that the diary, if it was her, that she describes as being kind of weird and inappropriate. Fast forward to today, November 5th, the FBI conducted search warrants on some conservative news outlets, one Project Veritas, trying to locate this diary. The Project Veritas CEO released about a 6-minute video in which he says that Project Veritas didn't run the story because they weren't able to authenticate it, and most other outlets were not comfortable running the story, but a smaller conservative outlet did run the story. They did say that they had connections to a whistleblower. And it's the assumption that Project Veritas was the subject of this investigation because they claimed that they had knowledge of where the diary was. So that's really the backstory here. The dark part of this is that, one, none of what the diary says about them getting it can be authenticated. We don't know if it's her diary, if it's Ashley Biden's diary. So let's look at this from two perspectives here. One, let's say it's true. It's her diary. She wrote it while she was in recovery. This is all out of bounds. If this woman was in recovery, wrote a diary about something traumatic that happened because of her father, obviously, the president is deplorable in that situation, but you are making this woman relive a certain trauma that she tried to get past in recovery to use her as a political football for her dad to play gotcha because you don't like her dad. That's way out of bounds. If it did not happen, and this is either fabricated, if it's her diary and it's fabricated, or it's not her diary and it's a conspiracy, that's even worse because you are then making horrible allegations against a man you don't like politically and running with it just again because you don't like him politically, and you're using her trauma, being in recovery for whatever she was in there for, to go at her dad. All of it's out of bounds. We just need to say this again. All of it's alleged. You shouldn't be taking showers with your daughter. that's out of bounds, especially past a certain age. But the third thing is the FBI, Southern District of New York, the DOJ, what are they doing here? It kind of feels a little bit like backlash to me against Project Veritas, known to be a conservative outlet, definitely harsh on the president. In a way, it feels like you're authenticating the diary because, I mean, like, you know, I joked off air, the Mayberry Police Department, Andy Griffin and Barney Fife wouldn't, you know, look for a stolen diary or a stolen library book. Like, that's just not a crime that anybody cares about. So what are they doing? But I just want to open this up for comment because this is, you know, this story is very uncomfortable and there's a lot of mud to sling at all parties involved, in my opinion.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. First of all, obviously, if it's true, that's awful. But the fact that you would stoop so low as to steal someone's diary who wrote these things while they were in recovery, that is the lowest of the low. And it's sad because we've long been into the era of the politics of personal destruction, where we're not even talking about, there are plenty of things to criticize Joe Biden on without having to go like this. And this is another example. This is something that you all have heard me beat this drum about before. I don't like when people try to manipulate other people's trauma for political benefit. Like that's what this is. Normally we're talking about it in the context of Black trauma, but trauma period. You're manipulating someone's trauma for political gain. I have a problem with that. And if it's true, you're re-victimizing this woman who clearly is already dealing with things because she was in recovery. So this is just, whether it's true or not, the fact that someone would go so low as to steal Joe Biden's daughter's diary to get dirt on Joe Biden is the lowest of the low. It is one of the most disturbing things I've ever heard someone do for political purposes. And that's saying a lot because most of the people in politics are dirtbags. So this is next level. This is awful. Absolutely awful. There's no way around it. If it's true, it's awful. If it's not true, this whole thing is awful. Like it's bad. It's really, really bad. And nobody looks good in this scenario. And nobody's even thinking about the fact that you stole this thing in the first place. Nobody was giving a damn about Ashley. She didn't sign up for this. You know, it's not her fault. I personally believe when it comes to politics in general, the children should be off limits. Period. Like they're not running for something. Like if your child is running for something, running for office, then they're fair game because they're in politics. But children should be off limits. I don't care. And I know she's grown probably most likely, but that don't matter. That's still his daughter. She has nothing to do with the decisions that Joe Biden has made or not made in his political career. And I think it's shameful. I think it's absolutely shameful. Robin, your thoughts?
Well, you know, like I was saying before, you know, off air, we all learned this in elementary. All right. You do not read a girl's diary. That's so disrespectful. Like, but you know, like you were saying, children should definitely be off limits. Grown or a child, it doesn't matter because again, that is his child, that she's a child and she has nothing to do with any of that.
Right.
I really feel like it's wrong of them to really target her and put her on the spotlight and her personal business, you know, out there. And I get it that they're, you know, in that spotlight already as a family. But, and, you know, and I guess that's, you know, that's personally, that's why I do not put my children out there, because things like that, you know, you got to try to protect your children from this harsh world, obviously, especially situations as such. Unfortunately, now she's dealing with this, and this could also cause her PTSD on top of what potentially could have already been.
Yeah, absolutely. Dante, take us home.
I didn't know that we had a new low in American politics, but because the bar was already so low. But man, we found a way to limbo right on under it, man. Like one of three things happened here. Somebody either stole this diary and it's legit and they decided to re-victimize this person, or they stole the diary and manipulated the diary and to make Joe Biden look bad, or they completely, the diary was never stolen and you completely made all of this up. Like, all three of those are awful, just awful. And but, you know, because we have a red team and a blue team and people so devout to both teams, you know, there are no new lows, I guess.
This is what happens when power becomes your religion and politics becomes your God. This is what happens. Let them know how to follow you, sir.
Follow me on Instagram and Twitter at Taebrye, T-A-E-B-R-Y-E.
Miss O'Malley.
Yeah, you can follow me on Instagram at Real Robin O'Malley, and you can follow me on Twitter at Real Robin O.
And you can follow me at D the Kingpin everywhere. That's D-T-H-E-K-I-N-G-P-I-N. We are out of here one more time. Thank you to Sarah Lane Lee for coming on the show. Really appreciate it. We'll see you next time. Peace.
The FCB Radio Network. First-class broadcasting worldwide.